Paper 13, right at the beginning, which is old single column, page 143. Okay, so as I pointed out at the end of group last time, we had that kind of extensive, in many ways, philosophical aside, sort of big picture philosophical aside of the previous paper. And we're now going to get back in the process of starting at the center and moving methodically outward. In paper 11, we did the Isle of Paradise. And so now we're going to move out the first notch here in paper 13 with the sacred spheres of paradise. So, they're spoken of as satellites of paradise, the sacred spheres of paradise, for instance. But remember, technically, they're part of what they call the Paradise Savona system, those 10 circuits. As you'll see, they mention right up front, they're in space. These three circuits, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, are in space, along with the billion worlds of Avona. The Isle of Paradise is outside of space. Okay? They aren't, in some simplistic sense, right there in the same place, as paradise and going around it. But they are sort of the most immediate expressions of the relationship of the three infinite persons to the aisle. There's three circuits because there's those three persons in relationship to one pattern of infinity, the Isle of Paradise. So they're very much derived from the relationship of those three persons to the aisle. So when you say, like, sacred spheres of paradise, what does the preposition of mean? It's in that sense that they're derived from the relationship of those persons to the aisle. That's why they're of paradise. Okay. So let's get into it. And as everyone who's familiar with the book knows, this is sort of minimally kind of what we immediately think of when we say cosmology. There's an awful lot about deity and beings and whatnot at this level. This is a pretty straightforward structural fact. You just have three circuits with seven worlds in each circuit. The sort of top of the whole picture role that they play in the total cosmology is what they're going to try to illuminate a little bit, how they serve as that highest fact that's actually in space and hence is a part of the pattern universe that obviously has the potential to pattern some very high facts and not change in order to be able to do that. There's been a lot of changes that have occurred in the central universe. And, once you had the seven super universes, there were some changes. But obviously, the closer you get to the changelessness of the aisle in terms of the nature of the phenomenon, the more immune, it's going to be to having to go with the, a changing flow. More and more, it anticipates as a fact, way antecedent. It's a higher and higher antecedent following, quote unquote. In that sense. So, especially when we, the first thing that we're going to get into the circuit of the Father, that's at the top of the whole pattern. So, you're dealing with the highest of things. Yes, once you step off of the aisle, anyway. Okay.
Paper 13, the sacred spheres of paradise. Between the central aisle of paradise and the innermost of the Havana planetary circuits, there are situated in space three lesser circuits of special spheres. The innermost circuit consists of the seven secret spheres of the Universal Father. The second group is composed of the seven luminous worlds of the Eternal Sun. And the outermost are the seven immense spheres of the Infinite Spirit, the executive headquarters worlds of the seven master spirits. These three world circuits of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit are spheres of unexcelled grandeur and unimaginable glory. Even their material or physical construction is of an order unrevealed to you. Each circuit is diverse in material, and each world of each circuit is different, excepting the seven worlds of the sun, which are alike in physical constitution. All 21 are enormous spheres, and each group of seven is differently eternalized. As far as we know, they have always been. Like paradise, they are eternal. There exists neither record nor tradition of their origin.
All right, let's just notice a couple things in their intro there. It's unimagined glory as opposed to unimaginable. Yeah, you notice the distinction is important. You know, it's not that they're unimaginable. But no one has even remotely gone there, okay, in their imagination. And a lot of that has to do with what I was saying up front. You know, in order to get there, you have to extrapolate what you have as far as extrapolations can go. And the more your initial angle of imagination is off, you know, the farther you extrapolate, the more it's going to diverge from the mark. Right? And with the help of the revelation, though, if you really get your mind locked down to all of the anchors in the revelation, and then set your imagination loose, you might get a lot closer to the mark on some things. It's not that it's unimaginable. Okay. Just if you're going to get anywhere near the facts of these worlds, you're going to need to start with very, very precisely directioned initial assumptions, you know, for your imagination to start extrapolating from. Okay, if you want to speculate.
It's kind of hard to imagine they've always been there, too.
And, you know, of course, the whole central universe and the Isle of Paradise, you know, eternal facts.
A long list of imagination challenges.
Yeah, I mean, just that, you know, in order, your imagination has to cross the time boundary, you know, for one thing. Yeah. So, now, one of the little things they threw in there about each circuit is diverse in material and each world of each circuit is different, excepting the seven worlds of the sun. Okay, why? Okay, you have the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit. The Universal Father has a relationship with individuality. The Infinite Spirit has a relationship with individuality. You know, they embody individuality likeness in their nature. The Eternal Son is the absolute of pure unity. Right? So, because the Eternal Son doesn't embody individuality likeness, there's no way, logically, for the Son's worlds to be different one from the other. They have to be unity-like, like he is. Both in physical nature and in the beings that populate them. But with the other two circuits, with the first and third paradise circuits, every world is different in physical construct, and every world has a unique inhabitants, because those two individuals embody, the first and third individuals embody the ability to individuate like that. They can, through them, there can be individuation. There can be individuation through the absolute of unity. Okay, so that's a simple little example of, you're told something. You should ask yourself, why is that? See if you can answer the question. That one doesn't take too much deduction, prior deduction, to have what it takes to answer that question, why? Once you understand that the aisle is the absolute of individuality and the sun is the absolute of unity, you pretty much are there.
What you've just explained, is that the what they mean by differently eternalized?
Right. Yeah. And it's again that they weren't created, they weren't eventuated, they were eternalized. Those are the three terms they use, for the three different levels of bringing something into existence. Was it created, or was it eventuated, or was it eternalized? Depending on which level we're talking about.
Three more words: secret, luminous, and immense.
I mean, obviously they're all immense, okay? But they're not all secret or luminous, okay? So they purposely kind of, we're kind of encouraging an initial little recognition of a differential, and we'll get into that in more detail in a minute. But yeah, see, noticing how they're trying to just start you off on as definitive a track as they can right off the bat. Those whole secrets of something or other about the Father's worlds. I mean, yeah, the Son's worlds are lots of secret to that too, but not in the same sense. Okay, yeah.
Material would be the different materials.
Right. The three, circuits have different materials, three different groups of material, as it were. Mm-hmm. And then in the first and the third, there's a second order of difference in the materials. But with the sun's worlds.
I know, but what would the different material be?
Right. Well, see, you don't know. I mean, your speculation, again, it says, that it's unrevealed. But, what does it have to be? Well, it has to be something that's intermediate between the substance of the aisle and the stuff that the billion worlds of Havona are made out of. Something intermediate between those two substances.
Rocks, gas, or water?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's solid, and there's liquids and, et cetera. Okay, I mean, but even though I can't imagine it, I can still understand what the boundaries are on my imagination if I'm going to try to imagine it. It has to be less than the aisle and greater than the billion worlds. Now, of course, each of the billion worlds is unique too. So there's a billion different flavors of stuff there, but in between, that sort of level of flavor difference, and the singularity of the flavor of the aisle in terms of material substance, there's some range. That's, and if I'm thinking outside of that range, I'm thinking falsely. I can definitely constrain my imagination, bring some form into it. Okay. Now,
you have the ultimaton in it. I mean,
well.
That would, that same.
No, it's different. See, that's the thing. We're talking about triada here, not dual stuff. It's different. So you want to be careful about thinking. Too much about. We don't really know a lot about
it's
what.
It's not a reactive substance. It's like the dual nature is. It's more.
Well, I mean, it has molecules and all this sort of stuff too. And there's a thousand elements and all this sort of stuff. But you just want to be too careful about, running too quickly with what they tell us about what matters like out here. And, you want to be careful as you're not making a false start. But anyway, just one other little thing there, okay? With the Son's worlds, okay, so he's the absolute of pure unity. Okay, so it's the same all the way around, the seven worlds. But you're going, well, but why isn't there just one world? How could there be seven? I mean, the Son couldn't have been the source of that sevenfoldness. That's individuation. Okay? The sevenfoldness starts with the seven worlds of the infinite spirit and the expression of the seven master spirits. That sevenfold individuation that is initiated through the infinite spirit then, you know, is harmonized back into relationship with the other two persons so that their circuits have seven worlds also. But in terms of causally understanding it, the seven worlds start with the third circuit and then are reflected back in to the other two circuits. And that's why each of them has seven. So you have that, you know, the seven pattern that you have around there is the master spirit seven pattern, not the seven circuits of Avona pattern or any other sevenfold pattern you might, you know, pull out of the book. It's the master spirit sevenfold pattern that gives you seven worlds in all three circuits. And of course, you know, we immediately will see that when we start talking about the Father's worlds. But just recognize, you know, where do the master spirits come from? Where does that sevenfold pattern come from? It doesn't come from the Father, it doesn't come from the Son. It comes from the infinite spirit. That's logically where it begins. And then, you know, it's the other two come into harmony with that fact. Okay. All right.
The seven secret spheres of the universal Father, circulating about paradise in close proximity to the eternal isle, are highly reflective of the spiritual luminosity of the central shining of the eternal deities. Shedding this light of divine glory throughout paradise and even upon the seven circuits of Havona. On the seven sacred worlds of the eternal sun, they appear to take origin the impersonal energies of spirit luminosity. No personal being may sojourn on any of these seven shining realms. With spiritual glory, they illuminate all paradise and Havona, and they directionize pure spirit luminosity to the seven super universes. These brilliant spheres of the second circuit likewise emit their light without heat, to paradise and to the billion worlds of the seven-circuited central universe.
Okay. Now, the first thing to note in the contrast between those two paragraphs, in the first one, it says spiritual luminosity, and in the second one, it says spirit luminosity. Okay. One is directly spirit, energy, luminosity, you know, a literal energy fact. The other is spirit-like, spiritual. Spirit-like unity, unity-like luminosity. And you can see from their description there, I mean, you could also call it deity luminosity. Okay? Because this is a great point to just notice something I've mentioned a few times. We often talk about matter, mind, and spirit, these three energies, and matter and spirit being, you know, that you can think of them as substances much more than you can mind. You know, it's just a more fluid-like than solid-like, you know, as it were, and just an energy. But there is sort of another substance, quote-unquote. But you're expanding the notion of the word substance way beyond anything that you can sort of immediately apply physics-like approaches to. You know, deity. Deity is this literal thing that bodies are built out of, God bodies are built out of. Okay? When you personalize that stuff, that kind of a body, you get personalized deity, you get God. It's a stuff. Okay, a very transcendent stuff. And just if you think about it in that more literal sense, see, that's what they're getting at here. You've got these three infinite persons on the aisle. They're made out of deity stuff. And that stuff is luminous. It emits a brilliance, as it were, that's characteristic of a characteristic emission of deity stuff. Okay.
Can we call it essence instead of stuff?
Well, I was trying to just be, I was trying to, you know, to force it to be very literal, you know. We don't want it to be too airy-fairy, too abstract. I mean, yeah, but sure, it's, you know. But the whole point is just to not think in some sort of non-literal, you know, or abstract sort of way. It's a literal thing that bodies are built out of. But, you know, full recognition that you're, you know, a word like thing hardly does it justice, you know. And a word like stuff really doesn't do it justice. But that was kind of, like I said, that was kind of my point. Kind of bring it down to something that's approachable. Okay. There are beings that can grab that like it was a glob of stuff. Okay. Even if we can't. Okay. So that's, you know, they're very careful about that in the book. Notice when they say spiritual and when they say spirit. You know, if they use, you know, especially if you're using just the word spirit as an adjective, you know, they're trying to get you to think more physics-like. You know, just literally the energy substance, spirit substance. Okay. Okay, so we have this deity luminosity, and then the rest of it there. Okay, so then this is beaming out from the center of the aisle and reflecting off of the Father's worlds. You know, and then, you know, that reflection is going back on, this glow illuminates both Paradise and Havona. Well, just think about, though, that statement. Okay, again, if you take it directly, you've got this highest substance, quote unquote, that you can imagine, this deity substance, and it's giving off this light. It's like, well, that there's nothing that's going to reflect off of. That's going to be such a high thing. It's, you know, it's just going to go through everything. No. It hits the Father's worlds and reflects off. Okay, that means that the materials that the Father's worlds is made out of resonates with deity light. Deity light interacts with it and is reflected off of it. Well, that's some pretty high material substance. Okay.
It's the right stuff.
It's some really right, very transcendent substance, if it's going to reflect deity luminosity. Okay, so that's, you know, in between the lines there. Okay, and then you go to the Son's world. Okay, now, you know, we're talking about the absolute spirit. We're talking about, you know, the anchor point for this other substance, spirit substance, and all the very literal energy facts of that. So just like there's material luminosity, photons, for instance, okay. There's spirit substance luminosity. There's a something that is emitted and travels through space. Okay, okay, and so those the Son's worlds emit that spirit luminosity. Okay, and that shines everywhere, including out into the seven super universes. So if we could see spirit luminosity, like I can see the photons from these light bulbs in here, you know, I could see this giant light bulb in space that is the central shining, okay, of those worlds.
Can you imagine that we experience it as a feeling instead of as a physical sensation?
Well, if you experience spirit gravity, and that's sort of the immediate thing that you could become aware of experientially, that there, you can tell that something is actually drawing your consciousness upward. And the there's sort of a, it's not, this actual spirit luminosity would not be something that would be sort of immediately felt, maybe, or maybe you could say directly felt, but you would feel it indirectly. When you feel that spiritual gravity, the quality in it is related to that spirit luminosity, you know, the brilliance of that spiritual luminosity, the quality of that spiritual luminosity. It illuminates all spirit substance in the universe of universes. And so any relationship you have to spirit substance is greater because of that illumination that is impacting that spirit substance. That's maybe a way to think about it like that. And you'll kind of get a better appreciation of what I'm getting at when we get to the third source and center. You know, that's kind of, you can sort of extrapolate what you know from the third source and center to appreciate the spirit luminosity a little bit more. Okay, so that's one thing, that it's giving off this spirit energy luminosity. But then they're saying that's just one of the luminosities. It also is giving off a physical luminosity. Okay, that's that light without heat. Okay, so it's not photon type, you know, material luminosity. But it is a physical luminosity. This light without heat phenomenon, it's which they sort of just tease you with three times, I think, if I remember right, is, you know, it's another type of physical luminosity. Something physical is traveling through space, okay, and impinging upon things and illuminating them, okay? But it isn't this jiggly thing like a photon that when it hits something, it jiggles it and deposits heat. You know, transfers that jiggly energy into jiggling of the molecules, which is heat, okay? It isn't jiggly like that. It's something, you know, stabler in some way.
Would it have its own velocity physics?
Most likely it would be just traveling at the speed of light, like all things that don't have an independent motion. And you could speculate, but I mean that's really beside the point right now. We're not trying to get into physics right now. We're just the point they're trying to make is that you have these two substances, matter and spirit, and these worlds of the sun are luminous in both those ways, both of those substance ways. There's spirit luminosity and there's physical luminosity. In other words, the worlds of the SON are what we would call SUNs. Okay, now they're not gaseous balls like the suns we know, but really they're suns. The sun's worlds are suns. Okay, you know, so when you say it that way, you know, if you literally think of them as these incredibly huge suns. No wonder someone like me, or even someone remotely like me, can't live on them. You know, not many beings living on our sun. Okay, it's kind of a harsh environment for a being to live. Okay, that's what these places are like. You're going to have to be a really different phenomenon. You're going to have to be those very special, quote unquote, superpersonal beings of the eternal sun in order to live on an SUN. Okay. And these are serious SUNs. Okay, they're not just lighting up the central universe; they're lighting up the whole place. These are serious suns. Okay, so obviously it's going to take you can't have any susceptibility to being impacted by an energy. Be it spirit energy or physical energy, it's just going to tear you apart to be on those worlds. They're suns.
Yeah.
very luminous suns.
It wouldn't be hot, though, like our...
Well, but it would be a lot worse than hot.
Yeah.
It would unravel you to the ultimate tonic level. Okay.
By the time you can even consider that, you can deal with heat.
Right. Yeah, well, heat is the last of your worries here. You know, it's like if a nuclear bomb goes off right here, heat is the last of your problems, okay? So what kind of a being could exist in a place where if you have parts, it's going to rip the parts apart? It needs to be a being without parts. It can't be an individuality construct. It has to be a pure unity construct. So there aren't any parts to pull apart. Okay? There's just the part of the, you know, of the entity or being, whose boundaries were formed by God, God the Son, and what God joins together, nothing is going to tear asunder. Okay? So, but if you think of it, this being molded, okay, God just, you know, his hands touch the outside, okay? But what about inside? It has to be perfectly contiguous, a continuum. There can't be any chinks in the armor, or this luminosity will get in those chinks and tear it apart. Okay.
So it's populated.
Yeah, it's populated.
Yeah.
But by pure unity facts.
Do you think they ever leave those spheres?
Yes. I mean, they tell you. The directors of those spheres send superpersonal spirit representatives to the super universe headquarters, for instance. I mean, some of those beings are on Uversa. You know, they tell you that. And who knows, you know, where else, you know. But obviously they're not confined. You know, you'd have direct revelation that they leave. How many and where and what, you know. Okay, we don't know anything. But other than that little hint that they're obviously there to, in an advisory capacity, with the Ancients of Days. Just like, you know, you've got all kinds of representatives high and low there with the Ancients of Days. Yeah. Yeah. So the sun's worlds are a part of what's going on now, but obviously they're going to be geared way towards future things. All right. Okay, so there you have it. So, you know, I mean, just literally, you know, start thinking about those less as planets and more as suns. So you have seven planets of the Father and seven planets of the Spirit, but you really have seven suns of the eternal Son is a better way to think about those seven worlds.
So the span of that three circuits taken together has to be really enormous.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Because they're going to need some elbow room.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're not going to have the Father's worlds and the Spirit's worlds too close to those radiant orbs.
For all the reasons
we just mentioned. You need some distance there. Yeah, some 1/r² would be handy. Right.
Or whatever the math is.
Right, whatever the absonite math is.
If they're putting out the Spirit luminosity,
mm-hmm.
And they don't run down, mm-hmm. So they have to be encircled somehow, do they not?
Right.
Eternalized.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, the eternal sun is the anchor point of that circuit. You know, his spirit luminosity is shining through them, through those worlds. You know, so in that way, see, it's similar to the aisle manifesting through the dark gravity bodies. You know, in a relatively direct way. Yeah. You've got a number of conduits, as it were, you know, see, in the central universe for the absolute anchor points. Okay. And the spirit's worlds are similar for the absolute mind of the third source and center.
The seven worlds of the infinite spirit are occupied by the seven master spirits who preside over the destinies of the seven super universes, sending forth the spiritual illumination of the third person of deity to these creations of time and space, and all Havona, but not the Isle of Paradise, is bathed in these spiritualizing influences.
Okay, several little tweaks that they made in the story there. Okay, maybe first notice, gets back to spiritual instead of spirit, and it's not luminosity, it's illumination. Okay, you know, that prefix IL, which is IN, and turns into an L before another L, like that, you know, in, okay? So they've given you that sort of in luminosity word, you know, luminosity that's in. Why did they do that? Because another name for this spiritual illumination is intellectual insight. Okay? Those three spheres, you know, are giving off an intellectual light, which is, you know, easiest to understand as insight, intellectual insight. When that impinges upon you and goes in you, it gives you an insight. I mean, the Holy Spirit, the three cosmic intuitions, those three cosmic insights are downstepped expressions of this luminosity, as it were, or this illumination. Okay? And so once you recognize, okay, then, you know, we're talking about the three cosmic insights for us, and we know that this is the pattern all the way up. You have mind at some level, and above that immediate consciousness domain of the mind is a domain of insight. As your conscious mind goes up, the insight goes up with it. So that there's always this transcendent insight just immediately above where your consciousness can reach, that, you know, is a transcendent influence inspiring you ever upward. Okay? That's what this is. It's coming from the seven worlds of the third source and center, of the, you know, the absolute mind, is this insight. So can you understand why it doesn't go to the Isle of Paradise? Because if you take, I mean, think about kind of the differential between my agitant mind, where my consciousness is, and the Holy Spirit, the three cosmic intuitions, the insight above that. It's kind of a differential between time and eternity. The extent to which I can identify with that transcendent fact, I'm eternalizing my consciousness. I'm making my consciousness less circumscribed in the moment to moment, you know, like the in-the-moment adjutants, the first three adjutants. I'm eternalizing. Okay? So it's like a differential between time and eternity, in a sense. A downstepped expression, you know. But as you go up, okay, the mind that you were calling the time part is getting closer and closer to paradise mind, absolute mind, you know, the mind of eternity. When you get all the way up to paradise, that there is no differential like that. There isn't something transcendent, because the consciousness is actually in eternity. It's not below eternity anymore. So there's no above place. See, so that's why you don't have insight there, because you've made it all the way up to the top. There's no transcendent thing above that.
You just have sight.
You've reached the absolute of time. You've reached eternity when you get all the way to the top there. Okay, so that's why it doesn't shine that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
There's no place for it there.
Okay?
Yeah, it just can't go where there is no place for it. There's no channel there. Okay? There's no capacity that needs to get filled with some insight. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so that's that that's the deal there. So, you know, illumination, insight. See, they're purposely using those parallel words that start with I-N. Okay. And you notice, you know, they brought up the seven master spirits. See, like I said, and that's where the sevenfoldness starts, and then the other two reflect that. All right. Maybe just one other little thing. You notice that we're constantly saying the infinite spirit, not the conjoint actor. Okay. And that's primarily because of that fact about the seven master spirits. I mean, you want to really think of the infinite spirit, not the conjoint actor, giving rise to the seven master spirits. You know, so that side of the third source and center, the infinite spirit side, not the conjoint actor side, is giving rise to the seven master spirits, and that's the fundamental sevenfold pattern. So that's why you speak of it as the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite spirit. Okay?
Although the worlds of the Father are ultimate status spheres for all Father-endowed personalities, this is not their exclusive function. Many beings and entities other than personal sojourn on these worlds. Each world in the circuit of the Father and the circuit of the Spirit has a distinct type of permanent citizenship, but we think the Son's worlds are inhabited by uniform types of other than personal beings. Father fragments are among the natives of Divinington. The other orders of permanent citizenship are unrevealed to you.
Okay. Why do they think that? We just talked about that. They're thinking the same logic that I just described. That's why they think that. They can't think of any way it would be logical for there to be a difference in the beings on the seven worlds. How would the absolute of unity, you know, create that differential? So assuming that there isn't some totally transcendent logic in play that no one can consciousize, it must be that way. It must be uniform inhabitants, just like it's uniform substance for the spheres. And of course, that's the other thing. I mean, everywhere in Havona, but you know, here it's really definitive. There's this incredible harmony between the matter and the spirit, between the being and that upon which the being stands. They're intimately related. Because you're getting closer and closer to what's the difference between the substance of the body of the eternal Son and the substance of the Isle of Paradise? It's a difference in name only, you know, for any sub-absolute being. Okay? I mean, we're getting closer. So the closer you get to the Isle, the more intensely they're like almost one and the same thing in some way that we can't even really imagine. There would be this incredible resonance between the world and the beings. You know, they would beat off each other in some, you know, harmonious way. Okay? Play off of each other. Play a symphony together. All right. Make sure you don't think too lowly about the word status there. Not status and, you know, the incessant clamoring of that sort of status. As in the word state, you have a number of beings, for instance, whose personality activity is in a state of ultimacy, ultimate status. Okay? That's a definite trend too. You have absonite mind in the central universe, which the personality is identified with that absonite mind. Those absonite mindal selves is either striving for, or is going to be already of, ultimate character. And very much so when you get all the way into the Father's worlds. You know, there's going to be many things going on in the Father's worlds that are way beyond finite, way beyond supreme, even really, you know, at the ends of apsonity, they're going to be full-blown at ultimacy. Because you're getting really close to the center of all things. Okay, so that's what they're alluding to there. All right, let's get some more.
The 21 Paradise satellites serve many purposes in both central and super universes not disclosed in these narratives. You are able to understand so little of the life of these spheres that you cannot hope to gain anything like a consistent view of them, either as to nature or function. Thousands of activities are going on there which are unrevealed to you. The 21 spheres embrace the potentials of the function of the master universe. These papers afford only a fleeting glimpse of certain circumscribed activities pertaining to the present universe age of the grand universe. Rather, one of the seven sectors of the grand universe.
Okay, a couple things you can pull out of that. Don't just let your eyes glaze over when they say, you know, you're not going to understand much about this. Pick out what you can get a handle on and hold on to it. Notice they italicize the word potentials. They're trying to get you to grab a hold of that and do something with that. So think about that. The potentials of the function of the master universe. And when we talk about the whole master universe, we're talking about the fact that it's encompassed by the ultimate one. You know, God the ultimate. So to embrace the potentials for that, you have to be transcendent of all that. So there's a little clue there that an awful lot about what fundamentally is at the core of those three circuits is going to be trans-ultimate. Yeah. Not the actuals of the function of the master universe, the potentials, what's transcendent of ultimacy. Okay, so that's something, a little clue that they're getting. And definitely when you unpack the, you know, what's going on in the central universe, you figure that out, you know, what that's referring to. We'll go into those details. But they're definitely encouraging you along those lines to work on unpacking the central universe. And they're giving you a potential point of refutation. You think, well, I think this is what's going on in the central universe. I think that the three paradise circuits are all about finite stuff. Okay, well, that's refuted by this sentence. Okay, so that theory needs to be thrown out. You need to try again. Okay, that's not a valid interpretation of the central universe because it disagrees with that sentence. Now, they put little things like that all over in the book so that you can refute your false rationalizations of the revelation. And the other thing there, now remember what's going on with the seven super universes. When they say that, you know, rather one of the seven sectors of the grand universe is basically what's being revealed in here, that, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the seven super universe, but the dominant thing is the ascension scheme. There's these seven different schemes, one of which is the ascension scheme. Each super universe, I mean, every super universe has all seven schemes, but each super universe specializes, as it were, you know, has a dominant scheme in the seventh super universe. It's the ascension scheme. The other six schemes are lesser phenomenon in the seventh, but they're dominant in one of the other six. Okay, so that you want to always keep that in mind, that you want to, you know, be very careful about doing much extrapolation of what you know about the seven super universe through this revelation to the other six, because it's only going to relate to part of the picture. There's, I mean, in every one of them, the dominant thing is not revealed in here at all. Okay, so you're really going to be missing the first order understanding of those other six super universes. Because of that, because of its lack of revelation in there.
Do you think that would be one of the reasons why, after Johnny...
Court of Finality. Okay.
And then we go back into the seven super universes. Is that to experience the difference?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, right. You have ascension and then you have penetration. Okay. Yeah. And obviously, you need to penetrate the rest of the seven super universe that you just blew through. But not totally. I mean, you did go all the way around at the major sector level. See, so you've penetrated it to a degree, but the other six, yeah, are a serious deficit in your horizontal, nature. And Steve, could you read for us next if you want?
I just wanted to, you'll
see that come up a little bit as we go forward too. But just, definitely keep that in mind all the time. Whatever you're reading anywhere in the book, they're not always going to remind you of that fact, but that's a huge issue. That's a serious limitation of the fifth epical revelation, that it's only really about the stuff that has some immediacy of relationship to the ascension scheme. And you're left just really in the dark about, well, what on earth is all the rest of the stuff about? Okay. Yep.
One, the seven sacred worlds of the Father.
Yeah, make sure you read aloud.
Where's the mic? There it is. The Father's circuit of sacred life spheres contains the only inherent personality secrets in the universe of universes. These satellites of paradise, the innermost of the three circuits, are the only forbidden domains concerned with personality in the central universe. Nether paradise and the worlds of the sun are likewise closed to personalities, but neither of those realms is in any way directly concerned with personality. The paradise worlds of the Father are directed by the highest order of the stationary sons of the Trinity, the Trinitized secrets of supremacy. Of these worlds, I can tell little. Of their manifold activities, I may tell less. Such information concerns only those beings who function thereon and go forth therefrom. And though I am somewhat familiar with six of these special worlds, never have I landed on Divinington. That world is wholly forbidden to me.
I mean, let's just, most of that's very obvious, but I want to make sure if it isn't immediately understandable when they say the highest order of the stationary sons of the Trinity, go and look that up. I mean, you're at the point now where, you've read the whole book. Don't just go, well, I don't know what that means, I'm just going to... No, stop and go look it up and then get that figured out so that you can take your engagement of the paragraph to the next level. The stationary sons of the Trinity, there's 10 orders of beings. At the top, like they said, you've got the Trinitized secrets of supremacy, the directors of the worlds of the Father. Okay? And then below them, you have all the of days, the eternals of days, the ancients of days, etc., all the way down to the faithfuls of days. And then you have the three groups of Trinity origin beings, one of whom is writing this paper, Perfector of Wisdom, and the Divine Counselors, and? No, the Universal Censors. Yeah, those are one of the Trinitized ones, along with the Mighty Messengers and stuff. Okay. Yeah, so the Perfectors of Wisdom, the Divine Counselors, and the Universal Censors, along with all the of days, and then these guys. Those are the 10 groups that make up the stationary sons of the Trinity. Like, you can go back to the Trinity paper. And read about them. One of the last sections is about the stationary sons of the Trinity. Okay, so get it so that you're familiar, and it's not just a bunch of gobbledygook words. You get the cast of characters figured out. It's pretty hard to follow a story, if you don't know the difference between Hermione and Harry Potter. Okay, if you just blur those two together all the time, it's like, well, but it doesn't matter. It's just a person, whatever. You need to differentiate. You got to know the cast of characters. Okay, so, so that point, see, that he's making, about Nether Paradise and the sun's, the worlds of the sun, they don't have anything to do with personality. So the word secret doesn't, you know, really apply. It's only in the Father's worlds, you know, like they said up at the front when they just, as Chris pointed out, they described them as the seven secret spheres of the universal Father, you know, where you actually have personalities on those spheres, but this sector is off limits. Okay? There's a secret there. All right. And let's see. I guess it doesn't mention it here, so let me just mention that. These Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy, there's 70 of them. Okay? There's 10 on each world. Okay? Why is there 10? Because there's 10 circuits of the central universe. There's 10 different flavors there. So there's one secret of supremacy for each of the 10 flavors of the Paradise of Onis system. So obviously, three of them are Father, Son, Spirit flavor, okay, that match the three paradise circuits. The other seven are like the seven flavors of the seven circuits of Avona. Okay, and each one of these worlds has seven sectors tied to those seven flavors. So notice, on these worlds, you have both sevens. As you go around the circuit, you have the master spirit-like seven for the seven worlds. And then on each world, you have seven sectors around it that are tied to the seven circuits of Avona. And that's a different seven pattern. There aren't seven circuits of Avona because there's seven master spirits. It's a totally different seven. Okay, so that you have both sevens in play. And that, you know, that'll come up when we get to Sanarrington. Yep.
One of the reasons for the secrecy of these worlds is because each of these sacred spheres enjoys a specialized representation or manifestation of the deities composing the Paradise Trinity. Not a personality, but a unique presence of divinity which can only be appreciated and comprehended by those particular groups of intelligences resident on, or admissible to, that particular sphere. The Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy are the personal agents of these specialized and impersonal presences of divinity. And the Secrets of Supremacy are highly personal beings, superbly endowed and marvelously adapted to their exalted and exacting work.
Okay. Remember, this sevenfold pattern that gives you the seven worlds, the seven master spirit pattern, comes from these seven different associations of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. You know, as we go through the seven worlds of the Father, we go through that list. You have the Father, then you have the Son, then you have the Spirit. It's the first three. Then you have the Father and the Son, and then the Father and the Spirit, and then the Son and the Spirit. That's the next three. Yeah, so it's easy to remember. I mean, they start with the Father, and the Son comes first. So you have Father, Son, and then you have Father, Spirit. And then you have the Son, Spirit. So that's 4, 5, 6. And then the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, that's 7. So you have these seven associations of deity. Like the Father is a flavor of deity. You remember, we're thinking very precisely about that. The Son is a flavor of deity. So just like they're saying, you have these seven different associations of deity, and then notice how they use the capital D divinity word again. I don't think we've talked about that. We might have it somewhere up here a bit. I think we first talked about it in group here was when we came upon it in the Supreme Papers. And you always have the words deity and divinity, where, forget about any capitalization, you have deity, and then you have deity likeness. Divinity means deity likeness. If something has the quality of deity likeness, divinity. And then they use capitalization to help with your orientation a little bit. If they really want to to get you thinking top down about divinity. They'll capitalize it. So, you know, a very downwelling deity likeness, capital D divinity. So that's the image that they're invoking with that. And, you know, so in other words, you have these seven worlds, and there's this downwelling imposition onto each of them that flavors them, you know, a divinity, particular flavor of capital D divinity, you know, the Father type divinity, the Son type divinity, the Spirit, you know, et cetera, around the seven. So they wanted, you know, they want to see it, you know, get you to see it in that top down sort of perspective like that. The deity coming down and imprinting sort of its character upon the world. That's the point of capitalizing that D. Okay, and so that is obviously going to that's going to be an overarching fact. It's just going to color the whole world. And for those of you, you know, that may remind you of a song from a while back. but yes, by Chicago. but each world has a flavor, a color, you know, a particular overarching character because of this capital D divinity imposition. Okay, and so the first one. And, you know, we don't have enough time, obviously, to go through this great big long section. You know, so we'll do as many of the worlds as we can, and then we'll pick up the rest of them next time here. Because we don't want to rush them. We want to work through each one.
Could you go back through those again where you said Father, Son, and Father's Spirit?
Okay, so if you want to look that up, you go to the beginning of paper 16. But it's the Father, the Son, the Spirit. So that's easy. And then the next one. Just remember that Father always comes first. So when you're doing the pairs, do the pairs with the Father first.
Father, Son.
So it's Father, Son, Father, and then Father, Spirit, and then Father, Son, Spirit. Son, Spirit.
Right. Right. And then Father, Son, Spirit is the seventh one, yeah. And the Father first.
Yeah, and you always say them in that proper order. Yeah. Okay, so now as we go into each of these worlds, there's two bits of nomenclature that they play with. One is just they coin a name for each world. Okay? Take the first one here, Divinington. You know, everyone who's read the book knows that all these names end in T-O-N. That's just like any town that you run across in the United States, say, that ends in the letters T-O-N. That's the word town. You know, they purposely are using that suffix. Well, not really suffix. I mean, that they're making a compound name with, you know, that word, T-O-N, the word town, because they want you to think of these as hometowns. Very definitively. You'll see as we go forward, they use the word home a lot, okay, and all kinds of words associated with, you know, like reunions in your hometown and that sort of stuff. Okay. These are seven different hometowns, hence the T-O-N, okay? And then they all have an I-N-G, which is a suffix, an old suffix, that basically means kind. Well, what kind? Well, it depends on what's attached, you know, what the root is that suffix is attached to. So if it's divining, it's divine kind town. It's the hometown for the divine kind, the kind who are divine. Okay? Divine, kind, town. Okay? And then we'll go, you know, we'll mention each one as we go through. Okay? And then the other thing, the other repeated bit of nomenclature is every world is going to be described as a quote-unquote bosom of blank. Okay? Why? Okay, now that's a little more advanced thing, and let me bring that in because a number of you, you know, understand this. You know, we've gone through this before. The right hand of the Father is one thing, that's the Son. The bosom of the Father, that's the Mother. Okay, so if they're using that, there must be some mother-like fact here. Okay, and what is it? Okay, it's the source of all the mother facts. You know, the gray box at the top, the source box for the hierarchy of cosmic mothers, the infinite upholder. Each one of the circuits of the Paradise of Onna system has a particular facet of deity that defines the whole circuit relative to the other nine. This facet of deity that's identified, connected to, characterizes the first paradise circuit is the infinite upholder. The upholder at the infinite level. The level where the father is the mother. Okay? That's why they choose that. And then so you're going to take that source of motherness, you know, at the infinite level where the father is the mother is the father, the words break down really. And you're going to take that common nature and you're going to flavor it seven different ways. That's that divinity, capital D, see, that's impressed upon that. So they're all going to be the bosom of, because it's all the infinite upholder all the way around, but the bosom of the Father, if it's that particular capital D divinity flavor, the Son, it's that particular, okay? So that's why there's two parts of that. The bosom part, that's the commonality of the infinite upholder, and then it's if it's the first of the master spirit pattern, it's the Father. The second is the Son, etc. Now it's not literally the world of the first master spirit. Or, you know, we know that's the spirit's worlds. But see, like I said, I mean, this sevenfold deity association that flavors the spirit's worlds is reflected back and flavors the other two. It gives you seven worlds, distinct worlds there. All right, so let's read a little bit about Divinington here.
One, Divinington. This world is, in a unique sense, the bosom of the Father, the personal communion sphere of the universal Father, and thereon is a special manifestation of his divinity. Divinington is the paradise rendezvous of the thought adjusters, but it is also the home of numerous other entities, personalities, and other beings taking origin in the universal Father. Many personalities besides the eternal Son are of direct origin by the solitary acts of the universal Father. Only the Father fragments, and those personalities and other beings of direct and exclusive origin in the universal Father fraternize and function on this abode.
Okay, so let's comment on that and then we'll read the secrets. Okay, so now, you should have had a thought already, but, okay, so this whole fact that the infinite upholder is in play all the way around, and on this world, I mean, the infinite upholder is one of the facets, let's just say that, one of the facets of that overarching deity called the Father. So if you add the Father to the infinite upholder, it's really definitively the infinite upholder. You haven't really changed. It's the infinite upholder directly there, not the infinite upholder modified. Yeah, because the infinite upholder is the Father. One of the facets of the Father is the infinite upholder. Okay. And so what do you find there? The adjusters, the Father fragments, all the Father fragments, not just the adjusters. They're Father fragments. They're fragments of Father deity. What type of Father deity? The infinite upholder. You know, that's the reservoir, quote unquote, that you're individuating those fragments out of. A thought adjuster is a fragment of the infinite upholder. So, of course, they dwell in the this bosom. Okay. All right, and and they're just starting here. You'll one of the things that carries all the way through here is basically on every world they say, well, really, you don't. We haven't revealed any of the beings around this world. It's like, well, I wonder about the next one. Well, really, we haven't revealed. I mean, they basically just say that over and over again. I mean, by and large, we really don't know anything about the beings on any of these worlds. There's just an occasional, it's like, oh, that one you know, they actually are there, but that's just one of a trillion, you know? and the rest of them haven't been revealed to you. So most of the time, you know, they really don't tell you much about what's going on in the world because they weren't allowed to reveal any of that stuff.
The infinite upholder is a part of the sixth functional level, supreme level.
That the way that comes into play.
So are they of the mother and the father for thought adjusters?
Well, no, just think, that's just the functioning. So when a fragment of the infinite upholder functions relative to you, it's going to have a limitation because it's functioning in supremacy. It's functioning in the supreme level of total deity functioning. We've talked about that many times. That infinite upholder, that fragment of the infinite upholder is trying to reach down to you. It's reaching down these cosmic levels. It can only reach down to the fourth cosmic level here, what's equivalent to the third psychic circle, because that's the supreme level. It's functioning in that, so that's as far down as it can reach. You have to get yourself up to it. That's why you have to get to be a third circler before you can get a thought adjuster, before you have the spirit of truth to bridge the gap. Because that's as far down as it can function. It can't function any lower than that.
But that's not the question I'm asking. The question I'm asking is, De Vinnington is the bosom of the Father,
right,
and that's the rendezvous of the thought adjusters. And the thought adjusters are coming out of the infinite upholder,
right,
and that's a part of the sixth level, which is the supreme.
Right. And all that's reminding you of, in terms of on De Vinnington, you can't just have, say, ultimacy going on there. Like we were alluding, there were a number of ultimate things going on in the Father's circuit. I mean, they're functioning in supremacy. That has to be going on there as well. But again, don't think of it as, it's not functioning as the supreme. You know, it's functioning in supremacy, capital S. It's deity function. So it's like the Trinity of supremacy. The Trinity functioning at the supreme level, that, or, you know, the way we would see it is the Trinity functioning in relationship to the finite as the encompassment of the finite. So that's the way they function. They function down to the sort of the outer crust of the finite. And you have to get up to that in order to connect with them. Or you have to get some assistance to bridge the gap between where you are deep down inside and the outer boundary of supremacy. So it's not, don't think of it immediately as bringing in the Universal Mother. Where the Universal Mother would come into your thoughts there is when the adjuster is out here functioning in supremacy, there is going to be a natural resonance with the presence of the mother out here. And that's really, you know, the point of putting this third column in the chart here next to the creator, the controllers and the creators of the sevenfold, is to remind you that, see, as you're moving inward in the psychic circles, as you're going up the cosmic levels, you're moving up in relationship to the mothers. And when you get up to third circler, not in any sort of external way, but in that minimal little internal way, you have some resonance, some synchronization with the universal mother. That's what makes you a third circler. Second circler, you have some resonance, just purely in the minimal internal sense, but some resonance with the infinite mother spirit. First circler, you have some resonance with the eternal mother's son. Otherwise, you wouldn't be a first circler. That's what defines you as a first circler, is that you've come into that minimal internal harmony with that particular mother expression. So it's in that sense that the universal mother, or God the Supreme, functioning as God the Mother, comes in. You have a measure of likeness to that level of mother expression when you're a third circler. And it just, and that's what it's reaching down to. It's reaching down to being in harmony with the universal mother, and that's as far down as it can reach. Okay, so one of the things that they're teaching the Virgin Adjusters on Divinington is how to do that. How to reach down and come into harmony with the Universal Mother. Because they're starting, it's just a pure fragment of the Infinite Upholder, they've got to work their way down through the Eternal Mother Son, the Infinite Mother Spirit, down to the Universal Mother. So that's part of their education before they can go out, to a mortal. They have to be able to do that. They have to be able to navigate down and engage. Yeah. Now, technically what that means, of course, who knows, but theoretically that's what's going on. That's what the main thing their education is about, is learning how to do that, how to reach down from the infinite level down to the supreme level. Good.
Secrets of Divinington include the secret of the bestowal and mission of thought adjusters. Their nature, origin, and the technique of their contact with the lowly creatures of the evolutionary worlds is a secret of this paradise sphere. These amazing transactions do not personally concern the rest of us, and therefore do the deities deem it proper to withhold certain features of this great and divine ministry from our full understanding. Insofar as we come in contact with this phase of divine activity, we are permitted full knowledge of these transactions, but concerning the intimate details of this great bestowal, we are not fully informed. This sphere also holds the secrets of the nature, purpose, and activities of all other forms of father fragments, of the gravity messengers, and of hosts of other beings unrevealed to you. It is highly probable that those truths pertaining to Divinington, which are withheld from me, if revealed, would merely confuse and handicap me in my present work. And still again, perhaps they are beyond the conceptual capacity of my order of being.
Okay, so most of that's pretty straightforward. Let me just point out a couple things. This secret. What I was just describing, is part of that secret. Exactly how a fragment of the Infinite Upholder navigates down to function at the supreme level, the sixth functional level. That's part of this. That's one of the secrets. That's one of the deep mysteries. It's a very deep mystery. It's the mystery of mysteries. How something that high, could do that in any way. I mean, no matter how much leeway you give it it's a really high factor. Who knows what it could do? I mean, it has all kinds of physics that we don't know about available to it. But still, it's just such an incredibly mind-boggling thought, even for a perfecter of wisdom, because it's not coming down from the ultimate level or something. It's coming down from the infinite level somehow. It's going an infinite distance to get to you. How does it achieve that?
It's a secret
because
it has to be.
Right. So when he says, perhaps they are beyond the conceptual capacity of my order of being, yeah, quite perhaps. It literally, you have to know the physics starting at the infinite level and working all the way down for this to be known. Okay. So, very deep secret. And then, for those who can't remember, gravity messengers. Remember, as when you're part of the core of the finality, you're working closely with the gravity messengers. They're our big assistants. And what they are, you take, there's a lot of different kinds of father fragments. You take the kind of father fragment that's called an adjuster. You modify that in some way that's not revealed. And then you personalize it. And that's a gravity messenger.
Run that one more time.
Okay. So you have all kinds of different father fragments. One of the types of father fragments we call an adjuster. You take that kind, the adjuster type of fragment. You modify it in some way, which you say it's modified, you don't explain. And then you take that modified adjuster and you personalize it, and that's a gravity messenger. So what's the difference between that and a personalized adjuster? Okay. A personalized adjuster has all of this experiential nature wrapped around that existential core. And it's that, massive experiential being that is a personalized adjuster. Okay, this, you're just taking a raw adjuster, modifying it some way so that it's personalizable, and then the father personalizes it. It gives it a personality. So it's going to still be in an extremely rarefied, transcendent nature. And that's why, it's independent of space and time. It can go from point A to point B in zero time and all this sort of stuff. It goes at infinite speed, infinite effective speed. And because it's still just completely transcendent. It doesn't have experiential nature that's brought it down into time. It isn't anchored to time like a personalized adjuster is.
What do gravity messengers do?
They help finaliters know things and communicate things. Apparently, they're messengers.
But close to levity messengers?
Right. I mean, you can read the little paragraph about, or the section about them in the finaliter paper. No, it doesn't tell you a lot. Right, I mean, they go at infinite speed.
Once we are in the core of the finality, we're going to be in the presence, we will be part of our adjuster, we will be a one being made up principally adjuster at that point, probably, plus the experience added on. But a gravity messenger will also, we're going to have, in essence, two adjusters.
No. It's your assistant. Not part of you. It's your assistant. You send it on errands. Okay? Go do this for me. Go from point A to point B in zero time for me because I need to know something.
I need it pretty fast.
Yeah, I need it instantly.
But my impression was that they were primarily so we could move with the distances that we're...
We'll have limitations. We'll be able to move really fast. But we're going to need to be in touch with a bigger and bigger sphere of things. And even as fast as we can go as a finaliter, you need someone who can go faster. Okay? Just like as fast as transport personalities can go, you need someone who can go faster. So you have solitary messengers.
We're not going to be slapping a trailer hitch onto some gravity adjuster.
No. I mean, again, see... Again, see, the whole point is that they remain a notch up. I mean, obviously you can have a very close relationship with them because at the core of both of the beings is an adjuster fragment, okay? But there's two very different natures wrapped around that core and then personalized, I mean, the only thing we have to go on really is the name. They're gravity messengers. Okay, gravity, you know, because they, you know, they travel the gravity circuits, you know. They see why, I mean, there's, why do you have solitary messengers? Why don't you just have the broadcast circuits? Why don't you just have the cosmic internet? Okay. Why do you have solitary messengers? Because there's some things that need a personal connection. And this is the mistake that everyone in the internet age makes. They think that they are talking to someone personally on the internet. No, you're not. That's impossible. And the extent to which you think you're talking, you're engaging someone personally is the extent to which you have no idea what personality is. It's two selves, two energy systems bouncing energy through the internet back at back and forth at each other. It's energy systems interacting. It's not persons interacting.
Well, yeah, I mean, persons interacting, that's clear. But if you're just wanting information, is there not going to be a better way to get it?
Sending someone? Yeah, reflectivity will get you information instantly if you just need some information. But they try to point that out a number of times. They're trying to challenge you to take your notion of personality up a notch and that it's not just an incidental thing. That it's not just persons want to know things. Persons need to connect through the, you know, like through the individuality of the whole. I mean, personality has to connect with other personality in order for something to be transferred or known.
Wouldn't it have some limit though, the internet and stuff like that through the circuits? I mean, you couldn't go forever with it, so you'd have to have some being that would be able to travel.
Right, but again, you know, think about how this works. I mean, you have the regular grid of energy that the master physical controllers lay out in the power centers, and you communicate over that grid. But there's time delay there. If you need to know something non-personal immediately, you can use the reflectivity service. If you need to know something personally, solitary messenger, maybe, or maybe if you need to get a personal linkage with a creator son, you can bring a voice of a creator son before an Ancient of Days. I mean, there's some ways around this where you sort of have a transference of a personal linkage through it's through the reflectivity mechanism, you know, the Sakanafim and their relationship to reflectivity, but. But see, you know, you're going beyond that with the finaliters are doing things really above that level of working with the Ancients of Days and the reflectivity. I mean, they're a very independent phenomenon that's really about the next age. Okay, and they have their own means of institizing, you know, the connectivity.
When the revelators put this revelation together, did they not all come to Urantia?
Mm-hmm.
So why didn't they just get on the phone?
Yeah.
And it couldn't have been coordinated properly that way. They have to be together.
They couldn't just upload their paper, you know, in the sense that we think of uploading. They uploaded it into the adjuster, yes, but you know, that's one of the things that is between the lines. And they, you know, and the Divine Counselor says, "And I came to your world." You should be asking, "Well, why? Why didn't you just phone it in?" Okay, it's like, well, we even know what kind of a performance you get when you just phone it in. Okay, so you know, actually, we've drugged. I mean, maybe we ought to save St. Arrington actually for next time, since this. It's getting kind of late, but you kind of get the spirit. You know, we're going to go through the other six worlds in this same fashion, and just as a teaser, there is a little treat, you know, buried in the St. Arrington one that I'll point out. I mean, we all know there's a little treat in the Seraphington one too, but some of it is kind of boilerplate like, you know, and say, well, okay, you don't know about any of those beings, and then there's those beings, but you don't know about them either, and then there's those other beings, but you don't know about them either, and you're like, well, okay, wow, you know, it's kind of limited in some ways, but if you want to mine everything, yeah, and like I said, you know, you've got the one thing that you have right up front is the names of the worlds. You know, and so we'll want to carefully think each time about the worlds. I mean, one question you could ask, here's a kind of a closing thought, is why didn't they, you know, if they call it Sonarington and Spiritington, why didn't they call it Fotherington? Why did they call it Divinington? Okay, and I mean, I kind of already answered that, if you think about it. Okay? I mean, remember what we have here. You have the basic divinity of this circuit. Oh, and by the way, did you notice when they mentioned it, when they, the first, what is that? It's the first sentence. They used the word divinity there at the end of the sentence, but it was lowercase d instead of capital D. Did you notice that? Because what's the context? And thereon is a special manifestation of his divinity. Okay, so they're not, they're speaking, you're on the surface and you're looking horizontally, thereon. Okay, they don't want you to have this top-down, you know, perspective on it, so they don't have a capital D divinity. They, you know, little things like that. But again, the basic deity likeness that you have through all the way around this circuit is the deity likeness of the infinite upholder. And that the first association of the master spirit sevenfold, you know, is just the Father. So that doesn't change anything. It's not like you're taking, you know, what's there and giving it a new flavor so that the name of the world indicates this flavor modification, this color modification. The color is unmodified here. It's just the innate divinity, the innate deity likeness of that circuit. That's, you know, so it's, it is, there is a definite deity likeness, a divinity, hence divine kind. But you can ask the further question, what kind of divinity? What kind of deity likeness? The infinite upholder kind of deity likeness. It's a facet of deity, has a particular deity likeness, it has a particular divinity. That kind of divinity. This is the hometown for that pure, unmodified type of divinity, the infinite upholder type of divinity. See, there's a lot. See, just in that name, if you can unpack just the name of the world, you know 10 times more than what you can read in the paragraph. Okay, that. You know, I've been trying to get people to recognize that this is the way the revelation is constructed.
That divinity is self-experiential deity.
Mm-hmm.
But these adjusters start out devoid of experience.
Right.
But they experience themselves. Okay. They start out with nothing but the experience of themselves. And then they add experience of other to that. All they know is themselves to begin with.
So they must know themselves as themselves. They're not.
Yeah. And they got the Greek thing totally pat. Know thyself. They got that Greek thing down. Okay. they're designed that way. Okay. The first thing that they're getting that's different from what they started with is the experience of navigating down from the infinite level. You know, so a virgin adjuster isn't absolutely devoid of experience. It has no experience with a mortal, okay? Zero experience with a mortal. But it does have something beyond that self-experiential nature. It has learned something, it has acquired something that wasn't there to begin with. It's learned how to navigate down and plug into a human. So, but that's all it has when it comes out. That's all it knows how to do is plug in. Okay. And so if you need more than that, they don't send a virgin adjuster, because that's all a virgin adjuster could do is plug in, okay, and make an embryonic soul. Okay, it also knows how to do it. It learned how to make a soul. That's another one of the secrets. Remember, I mean, you know, we've talked about this before. Exactly how is it that Marantia substance comes into existence when you don't have Marantia power supervisors and all this sort of stuff? This is a deep mystery. How this blob of Marantia substance comes into existence. It's your soul. No one understands how that can be. How is this made? The normal way that Marantia substance is made is not happening. Okay? This is the adjuster is building that. The adjuster is doing what normally it takes all these power beings to do.
Keep in mind when Jesus returned after his resurrection, he was
maybe something that's really upholding.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus' Marantia body, there's no mystery there. They know how to build those. They've watched gazillions of them built, okay? But his soul, it's Marantia substance. You can look, sure enough, that's Marantia substance. But where in the heck did that come from? Okay? It has no visible source. Where did the material come to make that soul out of? Okay? When you're watching master physical controllers and Marantia power supervisors do it, you can watch all the details. It's all right in front of you. You know exactly where that Marantia substance came from.
Okay. That's so with the adjustment.
Right. This seems to be magically materializing out of the ether. Okay. It's a mystery of mysteries. That's one of the secrets of Divinington. How a soul can be made by an adjuster. And then, of course, how the adjuster can get down to the point where it can touch you and then make that soul. Okay? It's the secrets of Divinington. Okay. But, just don't let something like the word Divinington just pass by. First, figure out the etymology of it. And then ask the obvious question, because it's just an obvious break in a pattern. You have Son, Spirit, why in the heck isn't this Fatherington? Okay? It seems like a non sequitur. Okay? If you can figure out that answer, that means that you've put a bunch of things together, because the only way you've done that is if you've put together a lot of the stuff that I've put together. But again, I've only begun. We want to encourage as many people as possible to understand exactly what needs to be done and to start doing it too. A lot of things have been done, but we want something very precise done. We want someone to engage it in with very critical, methodical, a solid grip, and start unpacking more of this stuff. There's 1,000 years of the entire planet's effort of unpacking to be done yet. Yeah. It's all, there's the harvest, okay?
Maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? The laborers are few. Okay? That's one of the things I'm trying to help people, I'm trying to teach. I'm trying to help people understand is this process of taking your relationship to the revelation to the next notch. And you'll find that once you can get into that mode, it's very satisfying. Because it starts to come alive. I mean, Divinington is not just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 letters and whatever. A D and an I. I mean, it has some meaning. It starts to come alive. You want the book to come alive. You want to be able to flow with the truth of the revelation. And the only way to do it is to take the time to get a critical grip on it and start unpacking it.
Unpackington.
Yep. This is the hometown of unpacking kind. Yes, this is unpackington. Yeah. All right.
Directly etymologically correct.
All right. Let's take a moment here.